Rock Sugar Magic is brought to you by Florida Boy, Inc. If you like Duck Dynasty or Swamp People, you'll love what Florida Boy has cooking up. It's Florida Boy, Inc., Florida Boy, Inc. on Instagram. Head over there and tell them we sent you.
Dr. Mary Newport, thank you so much for being on Rock Sugar Magic.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for inviting me, Carrie.
I cannot tell you how many years I have been sending out your video that
really?
Was done in a news story with your husband at the time. I know he passed, and I'm so sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
But I sent it out to everybody I know, everybody that has contacted me about having Alzheimer's. So I, first of all, for people that don't know you and people that I haven't sent the video to yet, you are a physician, you are a caregiver, you are a speaker, you are an author, you're a certified ketogenic nutrition specialist. And I want to get into that and what that means. But before we do, your video has saved so many lives and has stopped or slowed down the progression of Alzheimer's in so many people that I knew. No, my uncle.
Thank you for
yes,
saying that. It's well, always nice to hear that. It's very encouraging.
It's so true. So my grandfather many years ago died of Alzheimer's or with Alzheimer's. My father died of Lewy body dementia, and my uncle just passed with Alzheimer's.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
So, I'm so sorry to hear that.
It's horrible. So I was, you know, I'm kind of scared about can this happen to me? And I started getting things checked, like my MTHFR gene, which I have, got off sugar, slowed down way on the carbohydrates. I'm off of soy. I'm off of gluten because I want my brain to work. And I don't know if it was like, I feel like it was 12 years ago when that video came out. Something 12 years ago. Am I right?
It's probably about 10 years. It's about 12 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Very beginning of 2013, I believe.
And you had stopped the progression, and you got your husband better. He couldn't do a clock test. He couldn't do – his dementia was really
right.
bad. And
it
here you are
figuring
out how to help your husband and how to fix his Alzheimer's. Can you explain that to people right now? Because I want it right off the bat what you did.
Oh, yeah. So my husband, he was an accountant. He worked from home. And I'm a physician. I did newborn intensive care for 30 years. So I worked at a hospital. And when he was about 51 years old, he started having problems remembering appointments, and he'd lose his keys and his wallet constantly, you know, that type of thing, which seemed okay. You know, a lot of people have that problem. But then he started forgetting if he'd been to the bank and the post office, and he was only 51 at the time. And I thought that was really strange because I didn't think I would forget something like that. And he was also depressed at the time. And we took him to see a neuropsychiatrist who mentioned dementia, but he said more likely it's a problem. His memory problem is related to depression. It turned out it was probably the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
He was depressed because he told me later for several years, he felt like things weren't right, that he just wasn't functioning as normally as he used to. And so he, you know, basically had gotten quite depressed, you know, knowing that he was losing function. So I think it was the other way around, and it continued to progress. And at age 56 in 2006, he couldn't drive any longer. He couldn't do any of his accounting. He had been on a computer all day. He couldn't even remember how to turn on a computer or use a mouse or much less do any accounting work. And he was going downhill very fast. And in 2007, he continued to progress. He kind of stopped eating. I had to have one of my daughters stay with him at that point to make sure he ate lunch when I was working and that he got fed, because he wouldn't eat. He thought he did, but he didn't. And he was losing weight. So, you know, we were, you know, very, very discouraged. And basically, he had been diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's disease in 2004 when he was 54 years old. So we're now in 2008, and this is May, and there were two clinical trials that came along. He had not been able to qualify for any up till then. And there were two studies that became available, two different drugs. And I was on the internet the night before his first screening. They were scheduled 2 days in a row. And I'm looking for the risks and benefits of the two drugs to see, you know, maybe we might have a choice. I was hopeful we might actually get to choose which drug. And I happened on a press release about a medical food that claimed to improve the cognition of half the people with Alzheimer's that took it. And this was after a single dose, and also in a long-term study of 152 people that lasted for 6 months, there were nearly half of the people actually improved. And you don't hear that about any of the Alzheimer's drugs. Right. They never claim that they improve cognition. They only claim to maybe slow it down for up to 6 months in about half of the people. So to see that there's something that might actually improve his memory and cognition, I got pretty excited, and I found their patent application online, and I found out that it was medium chain triglyceride oil, and MCT2 oil is getting out there. It's you're seeing it now everywhere in health food stores, even regular grocery stores.
People put in their coffee. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, you know, but at that point it was very hard to find. And I was familiar with it because I'm a newborn specialist. We used to add it to the feedings of our tiniest preemies who were under 2 pounds. And we would add a little bit to each feeding. They'd grow faster. They'd get home faster. So I knew what it was. And I thought, well, I might be able to get this. Yeah. But then I also learned in the patent application that it was from extracted from coconut. And the reason why medium chain triglyceride oil could be effective is because when you consume it, no matter what you eat, some of it will be converted to ketones. And ketones are a fuel for the brain. And one of the things that happens in Alzheimer's disease is that there are areas of the brain that have decreased or abnormal glucose uptake. And every cell needs fuel, basically. And if you're eating a higher carb diet, that fuel is going to be glucose, and including for the brain. But in Alzheimer's, this ability to absorb, basically take glucose up into brain cells and even into the brain becomes defective. And so ketones can provide this alternative fuel. And at the time, it hadn't been proven yet. It was a theoretical idea. But in 2016, Dr. Stephen Cunane and his associates at Sherbrooke University in Canada, they were able to show with ketone and glucose PET scans that ketones are taken up normally in the same areas of the brain that are affected by Alzheimer's and can be used as energy. You know, they can convert to energy. So that was really pretty exciting, and it really supported this whole idea, you know. But we're back in 2008.
Yeah.
And it's the night before his screening. It's about 1 a.m. and his screening is at 9 a.m. And I couldn't really go out and buy, you know, MCT oil. I mean, it wasn't even really available. It was really hard to find at that point, or coconut oil. And so he went for the screening, and he did very poorly. He needed to score 30 points on a, he needed to score 16 points on a 30-point memory test called the mini mental status exam. And he only got 14 points. So we were told he did not qualify. We were extremely disappointed. We've been waiting and waiting for the cure to come along and for him to be in a clinical trial, and it didn't happen. And the doctor asked him to draw a clock. And I can actually show it to you.
Yeah. In the book.
So here.
Yeah, that's his clock. Yeah.
That's supposed to be a clock.
And that's a clock test for anybody that knows. And if you've ever dealt with somebody with Alzheimer's, they have you draw a clock test. And that's a lot of times, like, they can't.
They can't.
Yeah.
And it was very disorganized. There were a few little numbers in there. And
yeah,
the doctor told me he was on the verge of severe Alzheimer's. So wow. You might imagine we were pretty devastated, you know, that that he didn't qualify. We'd been waiting for a long time. And so on the way home, I thought, okay, we're going to look to see if we can find this MCT or coconut oil. Didn't find MCT, but went to a health food store, and coconut oil, health food stores were carrying it.
Yeah.
And I was a little mystified because as a doctor, I was taught that coconut oil is an artery clogging fat, you know.
It's such the opposite of what's happening.
It's the opposite. But I thought, okay, this is going to save his brain. I'm not too worried about his heart right now. And plus, it would take a lot of time for that to happen. Anyway, so picked up some coconut oil, and then I was able to figure out when we got home which were the medium chain triglycerides in coconut oil. I found a fatty acid composition on the USDA website. And I figured out that it was 60%, that's 60% medium chain triglycerides. And I wanted to give him the dose that would equal the medical food that they used in the studies. You know, so that worked out to about 35 grams, which is a little over 2 tablespoons of coconut oil, which is a lot. It's a lot to take for the first time.
It's funny. I take a scoop. I try every morning to do a full tablespoon full of it. And at first it didn't make me feel good. Now I can eat it like no problem. Yeah.
The first time I ate it, I had indigestion. Yeah. I have gallbladder in it.
Yeah.
So the next morning he was screening in a different facility in a different city for a different drug. And it was going to be at 1 p.m. And the timing just worked out perfectly because I gave him coconut oil, 35 grams or a little over 2 tablespoons in oatmeal for breakfast. And then he took his test about 4 hours later. And this time he scored 18 out of 30 and he needed 16 and he qualified for the study.
Wow.
And, you know, this was a big jump to increase by 4 points from the day before. And the points that he gained were things that were different from the day before. Most of them were the day of the week. The season was the same, but he couldn't remember the season the day before. This time he did remember. He remembered what town we were in and what floor he was on in the facility. So he gained those points and we were just ecstatic.
I didn't know it happened that fast.
Yes, it happened that fast.
I cannot believe it happened that fast.
Yeah.
One time.
So the first study with that MCT oil food was a pilot study of a single dose. And they had the people come one day and they got a placebo. Another day they got the MCT oil. And almost half of those people, it was 9 out of 20 people, had better scores, had improved scores, significantly improved scores on this mini mental status exam. So I thought, okay, this is possible. This is possible. And so I I think on the way home that time, stopped and bought some cookbooks on coconut oil. And I just started reading everything I could, started getting recipes. And one of the things in the patent application is the MCT oil, when they did ketone levels on the people, the levels peaked at about 3 hours. They peaked at about 90 minutes, but they were almost back to baseline where they started at 3 hours.
Wow.
And I thought, but your brain needs fuel 24/7. So that only covers 3 hours. So we're going to just start giving it throughout the day, lunch and dinner, and just start cooking with it. And so the very next day I started doing that. And every day we saw more and more improvement. Like for example, in the morning, he was very sluggish when he would come walking down the hall, you know, from the bedroom, he wouldn't talk very much. He had a stiff, weird gait. He would pick his feet up strangely. He couldn't run anymore. Couldn't tie his shoes.
He couldn't read, right? He couldn't read either.
He couldn't read. Right. He couldn't read either for about a year and a half at that point. And he had tremors when he would try to eat. His hand would shake and his jaw would shake when he was talking. He had trouble finishing a sentence. And there were just so many things like that. And just really not talkative at all. He really didn't say much in the morning. And over the next few days, he started coming down the hall, kind of bouncing down the hall. He'd be whistling, telling jokes. The tremor, as soon as he got the coconut oil, the tremor in his hand was gone. We never saw the tremor in his jaw again, which was incredible. And he could get water out of the dispenser from the refrigerator, which he couldn't do the day before, and pick out the right utensil from the drawer to eat, you know, which he couldn't do before. And, it was just really amazing. Just those first few days, and he could communicate better. We knew something had changed.
Right. And now when did he started? I mean, I know that you reversed it enough to where he could actually read again. He could do most of life again.
Right, right. It took time. It took a few months for this to evolve. So those were the early changes. At about a month, he started to be able to remember names of like brother-in-laws and nieces, you know, that we had in Cincinnati. We went to visit and he remembered their names and that he couldn't remember the year before, which was pretty incredible. They were all kind of flabbergasted because he had been really like a wallflower the previous time we came. He barely talked, even though this was his family, all of our families. And this time he was right in there with the conversation. He was laughing appropriately and they were like, what happened? And but at the 2 week mark, I had him draw another clock and I can show you that.
Yes,
one.
Please.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the wow. clock at 2 weeks.
Wow. After 2 weeks of just giving him coconut oil.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it's got all the numbers in there. I think there's a duplicate and it's pretty messy. And he told me later that those lines, I thought they were hands of the clock, like a gazillion hands of the clock. And he said, no, he was trying to line the numbers up across from each other. Uh-huh. He was trying to make it neat.
Right.
Yeah. And then this one was at 37 days. So it's a little bit better even,
yeah,
you know, than the second clock. And well,
both of them are better than what you first showed me.
Right. And he wrote in the 2008 there. He hadn't really been able to write or, you know, it was really quite incredible. So
wow.
It was really a big deal. And so then around 2 months, he was walking completely normally again, and he could pick his feet up and run again. And he could also tie his shoes right around 2 months. He could do that again.
That's beautiful.
The thing with the reading, it was about 3.5 months after we started the coconut oil. And in the meantime, I had also started adding MCT oil. Mm-hmm. I started mixing it, and I was using coconut oil for the basic cooking and things that were warm. Like I'd put it on vegetables, warm vegetables and sweet potato and something like that. We were eating like a Mediterranean diet. So we were on a pretty low carb, but not yet
right.
where we were, you know, with the ketogenic diet. But and then, you know, the MCT oil, you could put it on. And I started mixing it with coconut oil, literally like a 4-to-3 ratio of MCT oil to coconut oil. And it stays liquid in the bottle. You can keep it at room temperature. You can use it in anything, hot or cold. And, you know, so you could put it on salad, you know, I would mix it into yogurt or cottage cheese, you know, that kind of thing. And, but he steadily improved. And at 3.5 months, one day he announced to me that he could read again. And I said, well, why couldn't you read? He said, well, it was like the words, when he would look at the page, the words would break up. Like he said, like pixels, like satellite breakup is how he described it, which that in and of itself to be able to describe
wow.
it like that, pretty yeah. incredible. And he said, and that had stopped. He could actually read the words again. And which was amazing.
And what's amazing about this is he mm-hmm. got so much better that he could tell you what it was
yes.
like to have Alzheimer's.
Good.
Like
good.
Who at that mm-hmm. point, you couldn't reverse it enough to get somebody mm-hmm. who knew what it was like to have Alzheimer's to come out of it and tell you, this is mm-hmm. what it's like. This is how my yeah. brain is working. And
yeah.
When I heard that, that mm-hmm. blew my mind that mm-hmm. he could tell you what it was like to have Alzheimer's.
Yeah. And he could. He could, you know, I actually did a little interview for one of my books with him that we spent a couple hours, you know, just talking about what it was like to have Alzheimer's. And he said, for example, he didn't talk very much because he was afraid of what would come out of his mouth. And that kind of was what was happening. He and I, you know, we'd be alone at home almost all the time. You know, it was getting lonely because, you know, when I would talk to him about, you know, things that happened in my day or things that were coming up or whatever, his response would be completely, it had nothing to do with what
right.
I just said.
Right.
Like we were living on different wavelengths. And so he was afraid when he was out with other people that he wouldn't say the right thing. So he had gotten very quiet and he was able to tell me this, that was why he had gotten so quiet. He was afraid that what came out of his mouth wasn't correct, you know? You know, so there were things like that.
Right.
And somebody, unfortunately, once said to him after he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, she was trying to talk to him. And she said to him, well, you wouldn't know what I was talking about anyway, she said to him. And that hurt his feelings so bad. He had remembered that all this time, and he was able to tell me that that had happened.
It's so sad. I see people like who get upset with people who have memory issues, or they're angry, or they yell louder, and it's not going to make them understand or hear it. And it's it's a very scary feeling. There was I did these seminars once a year for my nonprofit Case and Cares, which dealt with elder abuse in the form of isolation, and a lot of people who have dementia are isolated.
And, they are.
Yeah. And there was I had gone to a conference where they had a booth set up that tried to simulate what it was like having Alzheimer's, having dementia, and the sensory deprivation and the hearing and the unable to see things and the confusion. It was horrifying. Even if it was a little bit right, it was horrifying to live like that. And kind of, Steve, what your husband did was bring that out and say, look, this is what it's like. And I implore people who are taking care of people with dementia, do not get upset with them. Don't be angry. It may be frustrating. And it is very hard being a caretaker yourself. It is very, very hard. But
very hard.
There is somebody still in there. There's somebody with feelings that is scared, that is going through hell. And you have to understand that. Yeah.
I feel like they're locked in. Even at the very, towards the very end, when he really couldn't talk to me very much, he always knew my name. He would say my name. It wasn't very good.
Right, right.
The way he said it, but he would reach out for me. He would hold my hand. And, he just seemed to, I just felt like he understood what I was saying. I had caregivers, at that point that came in to help me. And we were always careful not to talk about him in a negative way.
Yeah. Don't talk about the person that's right there. If they're unconscious, if they have dementia, if whatever, do not talk. Doctors do this sometimes, where they think that the person can't hear or understand. When people have come out of being unconscious, that could understand and could hear the room. Yeah.
And don't talk to them like they're children either.
Right.
When they get angry and upset because you want them to do something and you're talking to them like they're a child, they will do the exact opposite and they will be even angrier.
That's right.
It's very frustrating. They're adults. You need to still talk to them like they're your adult, like they're your spouse or your father, or your mother, the way you always talk to them. And you'll get, it will go better.
Right. No, that's very true. That is very true. So Steve ended up, your husband ended up getting Lewy body dementia like my father.
Yes, he did. He had both. He donated his brain. He died about 8 years after the coconut oil. We donated it and we found out it was predominantly Alzheimer's disease, but he also had Lewy bodies.
Wow.
And it turns out that, he had a number of symptoms along the way. I kind of suspected it the last few years after he was in the hospital the first time. They're very sensitive to medications.
Yes.
Antipsychotics can cause acute Parkinson's.
Yep.
Parkinson's disease. And that's what happened to my husband. He was in the hospital. He had a terrible reaction to Valium, which he had been on for about a few weeks. I'm a newborn specialist. It's not a drug I ever prescribe.
Right.
He was seeing a geriatric physician, and he would just, once or twice a week, he'd have trouble recognizing that he was in his house. This would be late in the evening, time to go to bed. And he'd say, take me back to my place.
Yeah.
And we'd go through that routine, trying to convince him that this is where he lived.
Delusions. And, definitely delusions. Yeah. My dad had that.
It's a delusion, right.
Rock Sugar Magic is brought to you by Tequila Commissario. Elevate your tequila experience with award-winning Tequila Commissario. Crafted with 100% all-natural agave, it's handcrafted and known to create tequila connoisseurs. Tequila Commissario is one of only 6 tequilas in the world to receive the coveted Platinum Award. Experience the best tequila in the world. Tequila Commissario.
And it happened, here and there, maybe once or twice a week, but it would last for an hour and a half sometimes, which can get pretty frustrating. So the doctor said, let's give him just a half of the smallest dose of Valium. You think, what harm could that do, right? It should relax him, he said.
Terrible.
Well, he did okay. And, the first couple of weeks, it actually seemed to be working. And he was still in great spirits, very talkative, doing well. And one day he broke out in an extreme sweat, you know, which was really odd. And then the next night he woke up with a night terror. He thought I was being attacked. And he also thought I was the perpetrator at the same time.
Oh, no.
And he was just in a dream. He was up and about and it was just horrible. And my daughter and her husband came and, you know, he ended up going to the hospital. I didn't know what else to do. Yeah. And they gave him antipsychotics, Haldol. This is all in my book. And they gave him Haldol. And it turned out they also gave him two other antipsychotics that they didn't even tell me he was on. And they were giving him Haldol like several times a day. Every time he was a little bit confused, they'd hit him with it. And within a few days, he developed a severe tremor that he didn't have before. And over, he was in the hospital for about 2 weeks. He became extremely stiff. He couldn't stand up. When he did, he was bent over. And then he just started having this massive sweating several times a day. And he'd have a fever and the tremor would get much worse. And there's an adverse reaction to these antipsychotics called neuroleptic malignant syndrome. And he was headed that way. And I couldn't convince the doctor or the staff that it was the Haldol that was doing this.
I mean, first of all, I think that is a crime. I do. I think it's a crime. First, you should know exactly what he's being put on. But he's got a disease, not a mental illness, which I believe most mental illness, because I was diagnosed with three of them long, long, long time ago, from ADD to ADHD to depression, when it was food issue, when it was massive vitamin issues. It was all that. And then all, magically, I didn't have them anymore when I got those on, you know. So, but to give a man who's suffering from a disease, a physical disease and a brain disease, antipsychotics. How is that allowed? How is that not criminal? And they're still doing it.
Yeah, they're not FDA approved for that. And in fact, there are black box warnings not to use in elderly people and people with dementia.
Right.
And people with Parkinson's disease. If they have Parkinson's, it will just exacerbate the disease tremendously.
So why is it allowed and why are they not, why are they not, I mean, it's like a little slap on the hand or they continue doing it.
I know. Yeah. Doctors are allowed to use drugs off label and, you know, they, unfortunately there isn't anything better to control certain symptoms. And so that it's used constantly for behavioral symptoms. When he was in the hospital, they had a nurse from a local assisted living come by to talk with me. And I did a tour there and, you know, the people on their dementia unit were like frozen statues. It was just awful.
Yeah.
You know, sitting in a wheelchair, staring, not moving. And, you know, I said, well, if he has a problem, say he gets a little upset, he was still at a point where he was pacing around, you know, he was up and about all the time. I said, what if he gets in trouble? Oh, we'd just call his doctor and they'd give him Haldol. I said, but he's having a reaction to Haldol.
Yeah.
You know, and she says, well, that's just, you know, how it is there. And so I decided we're not going to take him to assisted living. We're going to take him home and take care of him at home.
Good for you. And I know how hard that is. I know how hard that is.
It was hard and expensive. Yeah. That's very expensive. Yeah. But assisted livings are expensive, too.
They are, but at least you can be there for him. You can monitor what he's getting. You can do it in you know, I have a friend who has a memory facility clinic in Visalia, California, and she has had so much success with coconut oil. Like one of her biggest successes, what you were telling, she took a woman who was in the hallway drooling on herself. There was nothing there, and her family moved her from that facility to my friend's facility. And they're like, she's gone. She doesn't know who we are. She stares off. She's drooling. And little by little, she started coming off some of the medication, and my friend was cooking with coconut oil, giving them coconut oil. And within 2 weeks, the family came to visit, and she sat up in bed and she's like, there you are. I've been waiting for you. Like, just all there.
I bet they were floored.
They couldn't believe it. Like, what happened? What's going on? What medication are you using? You know, and it's not medication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can tell you so many stories like that. Just people that wrote to me, they're caregivers mostly, but sometimes the person themselves. And there was another man, I had gone to the assisted living to give a talk about this and one year, and About 2 years later, they invited me back again. Well, one of the caregivers that had come the first year, well, plus the whole facility, the staff were there too. She had given her husband, he was in hospice care. He was down to 110 pounds. He wasn't talking, he wasn't eating, and they really thought he was going to die soon. And they started giving him coconut oil. And 2 years later, when I came, she says, oh my goodness, she said, look at this picture of him. He had gained back 50 pounds.
Wow.
And he got out of bed and he was up and he was talking, and they discharged him from hospice care.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I have any number of stories like that. And those are just people that I hear about. I hadn't heard about the assisted living facility that you just told me about.
Yeah, I'll tell you about it. She's an amazing woman, just an amazing woman. And she's helped so many people, you know, just get better and have at least whatever their remaining years are so much better than what they would have been if they were, and they probably wouldn't have lived very long, stuck like that in that zombie-like state, drooling on themselves, stuck in wheelchairs. And I cannot tell you how many times I've told this to people. There's something that can be done about it. If it's Alzheimer's, some people listen, some people don't. You can lead a horse to water, you know, and that's all you can do. But tell me about some of the research that's going on now with what you discovered, you know, so long ago.
Yeah. Well, there have been quite a few studies now of mostly MCT oil. Mm-hmm. There are a couple studies of coconut oil. For example, there was one study in New Zealand conducted by a neurologist there. And he did a study first with people with Parkinson's disease and then with Alzheimer's. And both groups had really good outcomes. And they were put on a ketogenic diet. It was just mild nutritional ketosis, aiming for, you know, relatively low-ish level of ketones. Just to explain a ketogenic diet, the more fat you eat and the less carb you eat, the higher your ketone levels get. You know, so you can have, I'll just use a number of five. You can, with a extremely strict ketogenic diet that has, it's very high in fat, your ketone level will get to 5. Okay. Mild nutritional ketosis is considered ketone levels of 0.5 to 1. Mm. You know, so that's quite a bit lower than the strict. And you're eating more fat, maybe 60 or 65% fat, reducing the carbohydrate to less than 60 grams a day. Some say less than 50 grams a day. With a strict diet, it's about 10 to 15 grams a day with the strictest diet. But with mild nutritional ketosis, they're actually seeing improvement in a lot of people with mild cognitive impairment and with Alzheimer's disease and with Parkinson's disease too. So this study in New Zealand, they had the people with Alzheimer's, they were on either a ketogenic diet for 8 weeks or a low-fat diet, similar to the American Heart Association diet. And in between, they just ate their usual diet for a few weeks. When they were on the ketogenic diet, they actually improved their cognition and other signs, you know, related to Alzheimer's disease improved significantly. And the interesting thing about this study, it was a ketogenic diet aiming for mild nutritional ketosis, but they gave them a book of recipes that they were to use. And almost every single recipe had coconut oil or coconut milk in it.
Yeah, there you go.
I love this. And it's not obvious, you know, when you read the paper, it's not obvious if that's what happened, but they published the diet as a supplement. And when you look through the book, it was over 100 recipes and almost every one of them had coconut oil or coconut milk in it. And the same for the Parkinson's study. The people in the Parkinson's study improved, you know, quite dramatically during this period of time that they were on the ketogenic diet with coconut oil in the foods. So that was encouraging. And then there have been quite a few studies now of people with mild cognitive impairment, which precedes Alzheimer's or Alzheimer's disease. Like about 15% of people with mild cognitive impairment will go on to get Alzheimer's.
Wow.
They're trying to study people in groups, you know, who are very at risk for Alzheimer's to see if they can prevent it. So that's what a lot of these studies are aimed at doing.
Now, real quick, who are the people that are at risk? Like for me, I had Lyme disease for 11 years and I started losing my memory the last year. And that's when I said, okay, I'm going to finally do something about this. So it was scary because I thought I had early onset. I'm 51. So I thought I had early onset dementia, and it was terrifying me. Thank God. My brain is pretty much all back. But sometimes
you sound pretty good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Sometimes I do have days where I'm like, and I will say when somebody's talking to me, I can't think of words. I'm like, my brain's not working today. And sometimes it's my fault. I've eaten too many carbohydrates, or I know that I haven't taken my phytoplankton, my algae. I'm like, maybe I didn't have my coconut, scoop of coconut. Yeah. And I can literally not find words. They're not there. I can't, when I'm trying to express something, it's not coming through, but I can fix it. Does that mean though, I'm still at risk? What would make me at risk?
Well, having subjective cognitive impairment, where you sense that you have a problem.
Yeah.
It precedes mild cognitive impairment, because people with subjective cognitive impairment usually will test normal on tests like the mini mental status exam that we talked about earlier. Genetics has a lot to do with it. There's a particular gene called the APOE4 gene that about 25% of the population have one gene. You get one gene from each parent. The average population has APOE3 from, one from each parent. About 25% have 3-4, where they have 3 from one parent, 4 from the other. It's a name of a gene. And then there's APOE2, and those people are at lower risk. People with 3-3 are at average risk.
Okay.
So somebody that actually has the APOE4 gene is at quite a bit, about 3 times higher risk than normal of getting, developing Alzheimer's disease.
So I can go get that tested, correct?
Right. That's something you can test.
Yes.
They can test your APOE4 phenotype, they call it.
Okay. It's kind of scary. Kind of scary. But I want to do everything I can. To save my brain. Yeah.
About 40% of people with, Alzheimer's have the APOE4 gene, but the other 60% don't.
Oh, that's interesting.
They're APOE3 usually. So, there's just a greater risk if you have that gene, but other people can still get it. And there's a lot of study out there now and experts saying that about 30 to 40% of Alzheimer's cases and dementia cases are preventable by making good lifestyle choices.
Right.
And they rank diet at the top of the list and exercise second.
Yeah.
People that have no physical activity, they got to start moving. And the physical activities that are most beneficial, aerobic exercise, of course, but also resistance exercise.
Yes, I heard that. Yes. Weights and resistance. Yeah. And I also, if you power walk 10 minutes a day, they say that can add years to your life. Just a power walk for 10 minutes, and get off the sugar, get off the carbohydrates. The ketogenic diet has been, so helpful for so many people. So I'm a vegetarian, so I don't, I don't eat any of the animal products except I added eggs into my life, and that helped a lot.
I think eggs are good. They're very important.
And
very low in saturated fat. There's always this thing, eggs are high in saturated fat. No, they're not. They're very low in saturated fat.
I swear there's something against eggs that the medical industry to get you off of them if you actually take a look at what's in them and the omegas and everything, it's good for your heart. And they're telling you, it's bad for your heart. It's bad for you. Right. And they almost are the perfect food. I mean, there's other people that disagree, but when you break it down into everything that they have, the proteins and the oils and everything that it has is almost a perfect food for your brain.
Right.
Yeah.
It has, it's altogether, it's like one egg is 5 grams of fat. 1.5 of the grams is the saturated fat, but another 1.5 are monounsaturated fats, and the other third are polyunsaturated fats. So it's like an even mixture of the types of fats, and there's more protein than fat in the egg.
Yeah, no,
and
it's true.
Loaded with vitamins and minerals.
Yeah,
everything that is needed to make a baby chicken.
right.
And we use a lot of the same vitamins. Vitamins and minerals. It's a very, very healthy food. And The dietary guidelines for Americans, this is a big project I've been working on. People can actually have input. You can submit public comments to the dietary guidelines of Americans. They're revising them this year for 2025, and you can listen to public hearings, and I've been doing all of this.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And, for each age group, they still recommend 1.5 eggs a week.
That's ridiculous. And you know, I remember reading this, and tell me if I'm wrong, but that there used to be 12 food groups, and the meat industry and the milk industry lobbied Congress to make it, let's go with the 4 food groups, with the meat and milk being on top. And it's like, wait a second. I mean, hold on. There needs to be a balance.
Yeah, the grains. Oh my gosh, the 1992 food pyramid. This was the first time they came out with a food pyramid.
Right.
I was ecstatic because at the time we were told for decades already, since 1961, to eat a low fat diet and to avoid saturated fat and to replace it with polyunsaturated fat and to avoid eating cholesterol. I mean, for decades we were told this. In 1992, they come out with a food pyramid on which the base was grains, and you could eat 6 to 11 servings of grains a day.
Wow.
and oil was at the very, very top, and it was just the tip of the pyramid, and it had added sugar and fat was at the very top of the pyramid.
I mean, it's just, I'm so glad right now you're like restructuring everything.
Says it needs to reverse.
Yes, it needs to be reversed. The nation, we have one of the sickest nations in the world, and we have the supposedly the best medical care. And well, I learning that most physicians have 7 hours of nutrition classes and their 4 to 8 hours of schooling. That's it. So, you get sick, you go in, you have, you know, diabetes or you have a liver issue or you're having whatever, and you get Jell-O and pudding and fried steak and eggs and what it's like in a hospital diet. It's just, I don't understand it. I'm not getting it. It's
shocking.
I mean, Hippocrates said, let food be thy medicine. And we are so far from that. And people don't believe it anymore. Right. And they think these little pills are going to fix everything instead of fixing the root cause, which is your nutrition. Because your body is perfect. It will work if you give it. It's like a car. You give it the wrong gas, it's not going to work. You give it the right gas, it's going to work. Yeah. The right oil, it's going to work.
It's going to work.
Yeah.
And that's not even credit hours. That's not 7 credit hours. That's literally 7 hours in 4 years of medical school that they get nutrition training. Now, when I was in medical school, it was 3 hours, one afternoon.
And what are they telling you? Hey, Jell-O and steak and then mashed potatoes. It's just common sense is out the door now.
It is completely. I mean, diabetes, you know, a ketogenic diet can actually fix it. Somebody that has type 2 diabetes, there's Dr. Eric Westman, for example. He's just one of a number of doctors now, but he's a little bit of the pioneer of this. He's at Duke University, and he's been doing this for about 25 years, a very low carb, higher fat diet, ketogenic diet in people who have type 2 diabetes. And he's had over 4,000 patients that have gone into remission, completely off their insulin and other medications, and completely normal fasting blood sugars, hemoglobin A1C. They lose weight. And he said, as long as they stay on the diet, they will stay in remission.
Yep.
If, you know, it is a disease.
Yes.
And you kind of let up and you just go back to your regular diet. Once you reach your goal, it's just going to come back, you know.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Do you think Alzheimer's is diabetes 3 of the brain?
Yeah. That was one of the earliest things, that patent application I told you about, about the MCT oil. That's one of the things that they discussed, is that one of the reasons that glucose has trouble getting into the brain and into brain cells is because of insulin resistance and insulin deficiency in the brain.
Right.
Yeah. And there's a couple of other deficiencies. There's these glucose transporters that transport glucose into the brain and into cells that are deficient, and another PDH complex that allows glucose to get into mitochondria, where energy is produced in cells, and that's deficient in Alzheimer's. So it's like there's a conspiracy of getting glucose into the brain, and it acts like type 2 diabetes in many ways, but they also the people that have been researching this believe that insulin is also produced in the brain. They haven't been able to identify what cells are producing it. But they feel it's not produced efficiently. So they call it insulin resistance and insulin deficiency in the brain.
Wow.
So that would be basically a type of diabetes, you know, where the cells just aren't responding to insulin.
Yeah, that is, it's just, it seems like they know more than we've been told. And, mm-hmm. yeah. and like when I was watching that news interview with you 12 years ago, they mm-hmm. had already come out with a pill that would have helped people, reversed a lot of Alzheimer's, but they said it would cost $1,000 a pill. So they didn't do it. I mean,
it's gotten even worse. I mean, there have been two drugs. Aduhelm was approved a couple of years ago by the FDA. It was kind of a temporary approval pending further clinical trials. They had done three small trials, and only one of the three trials, they saw some improvement in a small subgroup of the people that had the mildest form of it. So the FDA approved it, but insurance companies and Medicare wouldn't pay for it because it was still experimental,
right.
basically. It was going to cost, if you were going to buy the drug out of your own pocket, it was about $37,000 a year.
Which is insane. And it doesn't even sound like it helps as much as the MCT right. oil or the coconut oil. When just stick right. with that. Stick with a ketogenic yeah. diet. Start right. making right. yourself, throw out the Frosted Flakes, guys. Throw out, you know, stop going to McDonald's. Yeah. Stop eating the fast right. food. There is no nutrients in yeah. that. It's been proven over and over again. There was a kid that went blind eating only chicken nuggets Britain. Did you hear about that? I mean,
he was blind.
Yeah, He went blind because he wouldn't eat anything but chicken nuggets, and his parents only fed him chicken nuggets. He went blind. And there's a whole news story. You can actually Google it, unless that's been censored. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just we have major yeah. problem with food and nutrition in this country. Yeah. Major problem, and people
major
don't.
Problem.
Yeah, they don't care. They want their pizza. They yeah. want their fast food, but yet they want to be healthy. They want to be able to, you know. run a few miles and
yeah.
not have the fuel to do it. It's like, oh, well, you know, we'll just, yeah. You can do that. So, you know, when you go up through your 20s, when you hit your 30s, you're going to feel it. When you hit your 40s, you're really going to feel it. When you hit your 50s, you are going to regret what you did to your body. I promise right. you that. Yeah.
Right. And it's, you know, I blame the whole low fat push, you know, for creating this because, you weren't alive yet, maybe.
I was born in 72.
Yeah, okay. So in 61 is when they first started saying eat a low-fat diet.
Okay.
And they started coming out with all these low-fat foods, which were high in sugar. I mean, to make a food, I mean, you have a choice, protein, fat, or, you know, carbohydrates. You know, basically those are the main macronutrients that are going to be in any food. And if you reduce the fat, you have to compensate somehow to provide the calories that are going to be in the food. And it means you're going to increase the carbohydrate.
Almost yes. For
maybe the protein. I mean, but people eat a fairly fixed amount of protein. You need maybe 15% of your calories to be protein, give
right.
or take.
Right.
And, you know, so that doesn't change. So if you lower the fat, you're going to increase the carbs.
Yeah, it's true. And, it's what happened to me. Yeah.
And these products just appeared like crazy, you know, starting around in the 1960s. And I remember, you know, I've been kind of researching, like I said, this Dietary Guidelines for Americans. And in 1995, they had a big committee meeting, expert panel that published about trans fats, you know, which were just kind of coming on the radar at that point. You know, there were a lot of foods that were these processed foods that had hydrogenated fats.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, margarines loaded with trans fats. And these things are all over the shelves. This until 2018 is when 2015, they were finally banned from the U.S. And then they revoked any exceptions in 2018. You know, so up until then, we have had trans fats in our foods, all these processed foods, all these
so
years.
Dangerous. So dangerous. Yeah.
They're very harmful. They're inflammatory yes. to many tissues. They're harmful to the heart. They have been shown to increase the risk of heart attacks, you know, so all those foods were coming out during that time. And in this committee about TransFast, they talked about that there had been a healthy people goal of having 5,000 foods like this. They call them fat modified foods on the shelves by the year 2000.
Wow.
Their goal was 5,000 on the shelves in the U.S. And there were 5,600. They were so proud of this, you know, this accomplishment that they had gotten all of these fat modified foods, you know, and this was the same committee that was talking about trans fats and the warnings. And at the time, they came to the conclusion, well, there really needs to be more research. There's not really enough proof yet that trans fats are bad. We still think that they're better than eating saturated fat.
So which crazy.
Is, it's which just is crazy yeah. because that's what humans were eating for all eternity, you know, all of human existence. They were eating animal fats.
Yeah, non-processed, you know, it's like it's along with the pharmaceutical world, the medical world, they've gotten so far away from nature and creating stuff, processed stuff is not going to be close to the natural stuff from the earth.
Right. It's responsible for so many, you know, and diabetes. So many people have pre-diabetes and don't really even know it yet.
Right,
a lot of people
right.
have type 2 diabetes and don't know it. And there's like an estimate at age 75 that 3/4 of people either have diabetes or pre-diabetes in the U.S.
Yeah. But you can reverse it.
And are getting,
you know, I have people telling me, hey, mom and dad, they're sick, or I've, you know, they've just tested, you know, positive for, you know, their diabetes 2. And I tell them, this is what you can do. Change the diet. Here's a book by, you know, like this person that telling you how to reverse it. Here's some videos, but, you know, that so many people have videos out, like this is how I reverse mine, or Dr. Berg talking about it, or you or whatever, you know, talking about diabetes, like you can reverse it. Yet they still want to have their waffles and powdered sugar, and they still want to have their frosted flakes and take the pill. I mean, and
I'd rather take the medications than just fix the whole thing and all the other possible chronic diseases they can develop.
But there goes their legs, you know, they're chopping off their legs and they're in wheelchairs and they can't function anymore. And it's
these are failing and their eyes, they're going blind, you know, from diabetes. Yeah. And for a while I was doing, I did newborn intensive care for 30 years and because of my husband's experience with hospice, I became a hospice doctor, the opposite end of the spectrum for about 3 years. And I would see the end results of all of these things.
Right. It's horrifying.
It is horrifying. And it was so preventable, you know, if people would just eat, you know, whole foods, basically whole foods and it just greatly reducing the carbohydrate in the diet. It's just too much. A lot of people are eating 400 or 500 grams a day. And not, you know, and the fats that they are eating aren't healthy fats.
They're not healthy fats. It's not healthy food. I could talk to you. I swear we could do 2 or 3 hours on this. I would love to have you back. I'm running up against the clock here, but I can't tell you how excited I was when you said yes to do this show. So I just think
to have you invite me. I remember listening to your father.
That's awesome. That's awesome. But you've just helped so many people, and thank you. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for what, you know, we're going to put your books and your site and everywhere where people can find you, you know, in the links below. So anybody who wants to get a hold of you or read your books and you know, share your videos, share would be amazing. Please share this, give this to anybody, you know, I tell that to people, to anybody who has Alzheimer's or anybody even now with, you know, type 2 diabetes, there are things that can be done. Even if doctors tell you there's not, that's not true. Right. I don't believe it anymore. Right.
Yeah. I have a website. My books are on Amazon, a lot of other book websites, and I'm on TikTok. And I've got a YouTube channel, Mary Newport MD, and it's got 70 something, and yours will definitely be added to it.
Awesome.
Excited to get to do this. Just tremendously to spread the message. It's just wonderful.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And I'm sure I would love to have you on again.
Oh, thank you so much, Carrie.
Right. Have a good one.
You too.